Welcome back to the Aviation Journalist Roundtable. I'm Afterburner Al, and joining me is Tom Haynes, who's the editor of AOPA Pilot Magazine, and Mac McClellan, editor of Flying Magazine. I didn't know, you know, you have the, at least I've seen on some of the magazine covers, you got the exclamation point. And are you supposed to say it a certain way?
Well, we don't have exclamation after flying, but we do sometimes on our cover lines, although not too often. We're not quite the New York Post yet, but who knows?
We were talking a little bit before the break about the FAA and how they would, you know, say if you certified an aircraft, how they work with you to as you come up with your idea. Now, Eclipse Aviation had some trouble for several different reasons, a lot of it financial, and also basically spearheading the very light jet movement. How much was the FAA, some people have suggested the FAA rushed a little bit too much in granting certification, and was that... did that play a role in the problems that Eclipse had?
I don't know if it played a role, but certainly it received, let's call it different treatment than any jet so far. One of the biggest examples is that so far every multi-engine jet had met the same takeoff rules. In other words, you had a decision speed, you can stop on the runway or then continue with minimum performance guaranteed in the handbook. That's not true of turboprops or of piston twins, but it was true of all jets, even the ones that were well under the transport category. So the FAA agreed with Eclipse that they weighed less than 6,000 pounds, so they delivered the same performance or lack of it that a Baron or an Aztec or something would. Mm-hmm. So that was eye-opening to many of us. We didn't expect that. And there were other unique issues, let's call them. But to me, they all worked in favor of Eclipse in the sense that making it possible for them to get to market sooner, not that they got there soon, but the FAA clearly wasn't in an impediment to them.
In that same vein, Eclipse did have problems, yet we're seeing a lot of different very light jet entries still. So there's a lot of people out there who really think that this particular niche of the market may work. What are some of the things that you're hearing from the manufacturers, Tom?
Well, you're right. There have been continue to be lots of new entrants into that category, and you know, at the end of the day, it's hard to say. I can't imagine somebody getting into the very light jet business in this environment, this economic environment, and expecting to succeed. It's just you know, very difficult to raise funds for established, well-known companies with proven track records. So it's got to be tough sledding for those who are trying to get in there today. I mean, at the end of the day, I would say that Cessna has shown that there is a market for a very light jet, even though I know they don't like to call theirs that, and there's some no defined definition of the VLJ. But anyhow, they have shown that people will buy a light jet. And so anybody who can come to the market and deliver an airplane that's as solid as the Mustang and does all the thing that the Mustang can for a price point that's competitive, I think will do well. There's certainly a market there for anywhere from a few dozen to probably maybe even a couple of hundred airplanes if the economy were to rebound. And so I think there's opportunity, but I just don't see it in the short term as coming to fruition.
Well, I think that the VLJ concept is really been put to rest. The Mustang is a light jet, but it's not that much lighter than the original Citation 500. You know, it's within 1,500 pounds or so. And the Phenom, an excellent airplane, is very well received. I expect the Honda Jet and some others in that same light but not astonishingly light category to be successful. I think what the very light concept turns out to be is a single-engine jet. And of course, there are operational as well as capital investment savings to be made that were not possible in a twin jet, no matter how light you made it. So with the three very advanced programs at this point from Diamond and Cirrus and Piper, I would expect at least one of those to be successful and to follow the same path that the PC-12, the TBM, and the Piper Meridian have. And people, individuals who would be reluctant to qualify in a multi-engine airplane will feel comfortable in that. The airplanes will deliver excellent economy And I'm very excited about the single engine. Now, we could call that very light jet, but I think the one motor is the key to the success of the concept.
Right. That's sort of taken on the definition of personal jet. But once again, like the term very light jet, not a lot of definition there. But I think Mac is right that there is certainly opportunity around a single engine jet with the very efficient engines we're seeing out there to make a difference, and that some individuals are going to have a great time out there flying some of the three that are currently in advanced development.
I agree that one of the paramount challenges of launching something like this is the seed money, the financial seed money to start the design and test and research and development process to bring an airplane to certification. And what is the tipping point between, say, these turboprop singles like the Meridian and the single engine jet? Is it status? Is there really a speed difference or a payload difference between the two?
I think it's status, if that's the word you choose. I would call it excitement and the glamour of the jet. There won't be a huge difference in speed between a single engine jet and something like the TBM-850, which is a very quick airplane. And as usual, the turboprop will win the range because it's just still more efficient than a jet. And also the turboprop is less impacted by altitude. And so the light jets, if they cannot climb to their optimum altitude, which is typical in busy areas of the country, ATC doesn't have unfettered ability to let you climb. So the range is going to be an issue for the jets, as always.
I would say that's the same with the twin-engine jets.
Absolutely. In fact, the singles will have an advantage because they're not carrying that second engine along and all the fuel it takes. So,
yeah, I think I mentioned to you, Tom, a flight I took in June in the CJ-3 from Coatesville, Pennsylvania, all the way down to south of Corpus Christi. Uh-huh. And Philadelphia approach, thankfully, gave us an up pretty fast, because otherwise that 4-hour and 13-minute flight was not going to be done nonstop, that's mm-hmm. for sure. And so the limitations of the pure turbojet certainly would lose out to the turboprop if you had to stay down low. More populated areas, if you're going to operate out of there, may not be the best for this particular application. But obviously this is something that we're going to have to watch mature and see who bet right, and if they always bet on black, red, or number 7 for that matter. Another thing that has raised the hackles of a lot of the general aviation community is the Large Aircraft Security Program, and it seems like this expansion into the Part 91 area that has pretty much been left alone as far as some of the open to the public type of flying. But now the TSA seems to have some pretty... they seem to be able to make policy without really checking with anybody else. And we never thought it was going to end, but now it might have been curtailed a little bit. What insights do you have about that?
Well, certainly the large aircraft security plan that has been floated were it implemented, would be disastrous for general aviation. And but I think there's been a lot of negotiation. We've finally convinced them, the TSA, to have some hearings on it, which were well attended. As I want to 7,000 responses to the NPR or to the comment period. And so the chances of that bill as it was originally, or that proposal getting implemented the way it was originally proposed is unlikely. You're going to see the maximum gross weight of the airplanes affected by it be much higher, at least double of what it was under the original proposal of the 12.5. So I think you're not going to see that implemented, at least based on the intelligence that we're getting. But certainly it is frustrating how TSA has the ability to implement regulations without necessarily going through the regulatory process that the FAA, for example, must go through. And there has been some legislation introduced, and I believe a bill actually passed in the House that would somewhat curtail that, but it's still a long ways from a bill being passed by the House to actually becoming law.
Is when in making this policy, Is there just the people who are there just have a one-way thinking that there's really only one way that airplanes fly? Is it that simple? Is it just to save time, not to research the legislation, how they're going to do it? It says, well, this is we're just going to pick this category of airplanes since they all since they all are commercial in their minds. What drives some of this rulemaking? Is there anyone in TSA that flies?
Well, I think there were two things in this proposal, and one is that the FAA, as you know, breaks airplane categories at 12,500 pounds max takeoff weight into large and small. So this large word was extended all the way up to an Airbus 380 in the minds of the TSA. And a TSA is a completely unelected group responsible to no one doing God's work. And they will trade any amount of our cost and freedoms for to solve what they think is the most infinitesimal risk or threat to the country.
And this is, I don't know when the influence of 9/11, how long, at least the first couple years of rulemaking that was mostly reactive,
right.
And how long that particular hold on some of our daily lives will last without truly honoring some of the risks that we do have around, you know, and in result of that. It's interesting to see which ones will still be in place because no one thought to change them ever since they are enacted. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the future of general aviation, what it may look like if we had our way and if other people had their way. You're listening to EAA Radio.